highly recommend. We're going to be studying Matthew chapter 8, or passages coming from there. I also want you to take your outlines out at this time. Now's a great time. Hopefully you got one of those from my friend Mr. Randy on the way in. That way you can take notes and jot down things that God is bringing to mind. Like my wife Kelly would always say, if God brings something to your mind, it's worth writing down. So we encourage you to do that. Have you ever had a phrase that kind of stuck with you from your youth? I know for me, we have certain phrases that we used when we were young that just made total sense to me. I've been using them for years. Have you ever heard the phrase, big talk, no action? Yeah, we had a lot of big talk, no action, guys, when I was growing up. And what does that mean? Anybody want to take a stab at it? Big talk, no action? Code. Yeah, people who say they're going to do something, but they don't really back it up with any kind of action. I remember folks telling me, oh, they're going to get a certain job at a certain place, and after a while, absolutely nothing materializes. Other people would tell you, hey, you know what, by the end of the summer, I'm going to bench press 300 pounds. And they never really go near a weight room the entire summer, and it never happens. Other people would tell you, hey, I'm going to get a car. And then you see them next year riding their mom's station wagon because they never really got the car. Well, you see, these guys, they talk a good game, but you realize pretty quickly that their talk is all backed up with no action. It just, their rhetoric is never backed up with anything that they're really going to do. And it's with incredible nerve sometimes that these folks will actually, these big talk, no action guys, they may even tell you what you should do while they really don't do anything. Well, as we look at the story of Jesus, we find that it can never be said of Jesus that he's big talk, no action. Now, remember, as we've been studying this, Jesus has been saying plenty of things in this series as we've been walking along with Jesus through his ministry walk. And I think back to Jesus' sermon that he taught on the side of a mountainside. Jesus is laying down some pretty big talk in this sermon. And the thing I want to talk about tonight is let's prove whether Jesus is all talk, big talk, no action, or does he back his words up with some action? Does he pontificate about things? And does he really do nothing about it? So we're going to investigate. But I want to bring you back in time so he's on this mountainside, because Matthew chapter 8 is going to pick up as he comes down the mountainside. So let me take you back, rewind a little bit, to some of the things that he's saying. Picture yourself sitting on the side of a hill, beautiful sunny day, clouds rolling by, and Jesus talking his talk. And here's some of the things he says. Let me tell you why you are here. You are here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. Now, if you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? Here's another way to put it, Jesus says. You're here to be light, bringing out the God colors in the world. God is not to be kept a secret. No, we're going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. And if I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket, do you? I'm putting you on a light stand. He goes on to say, if you enter your place of worship, like Westbridge here, and you're about to make an offering, you suddenly remember a grudge that a friend has against you? Abandon your offering. Leave immediately. Go to this friend, make things right. And don't say anything that you don't mean. This counsel is embedded deep in our traditions. You only make things worse when you lay down a smoke screen of pious talk, saying, I'll pray for you, and you never do it. Or saying, God be with you, and not really meaning it. You don't make your words true by embellishing them with religious lace. In making your speech sound more religious, it becomes less true. Just say yes or no. When you manipulate words, get your own way, you go wrong. In a word, I'm saying this. Grow up. You are kingdom subjects. Now live like it.
Live out your God-created identity. Live generously and graciously towards others the way God lives towards you. Don't pick on people and don't jump on their failures. Don't criticize their faults, unless, of course, you want the same treatment. This critical spirit has a way of boomeranging. I can see it now. At the final judgment, thousands strutting up to me saying, "Master, we preached the message. We bashed demons. Our God-sponsored projects had everyone talking." And do you know what I'm going to say? You missed the boat. All you did was use me to make yourselves important. You didn't impress me one bit. You're out of here. These words that I speak to you are not incidental additions to your life. Homeowner improvements to your standard of living? No, they are foundational words, words to build a life on. If you work these words into your life, you are like a smart carpenter who built his house on solid rock. Rain poured down, the river flooded, a tornado hit, but nothing moved the house. It was fixed to the rock. But if you just use my words in Bible studies and don't work them into your life, you're like a stupid carpenter who built his house on the sandy beach, and when the storm rolled in and the waves came up, it collapsed like a house of cards. End. Jesus speaking. That was all Jesus speaking from the side of this hill. And with that talk, Jesus walks off the mountain. But as he does, as Jesus walks away from all this talk, he comes face to face with a man, a desperate man. And that's the passage we're going to read tonight. Four verses. The passage is Matthew 8, verses 1 through 4. Large crowds followed Jesus as he came down the mountainside. Okay, he's just finished with all the big talk. Now he's walking down the mountainside, and suddenly, verse 2, a man with leprosy, a harmful skin disease, approached Jesus. He knelt before him, worshiping. "Lord," the man said, "if you want to, you can make me well again." Jesus touched him. "I want to," he said. "Be healed." And instantly the leprosy disappeared. Then Jesus said to him, "Go right over to the priest and let him examine you. Don't talk to anyone along the way. Take along the offering required in the law of Moses for those who have been healed of leprosy, so everyone will have proof of your healing." All right, Jesus, Mr. Big Talk, right? We've just been Mr. Big Talk up on the mountain. We'll see if you have any action to back this up. And here's the first lesson that we're going to learn tonight. First observation is this. When you have the answers, people come to you for help. When you have the answers, gang, people come to you for help. We see this in this passage. I read you only snippets of Jesus' sermon. It takes, by the way, about 17 minutes to read the entire Sermon on the Mount. That's all it takes, 17 minutes. And yet, although I only read you snippets, I'll bet even in the snippets you could feel and sense the authority that Jesus commanded and the answers that he possessed about the mystery of life. And so it makes perfect sense that people would run to him for help. And that is exactly what this leper does. Here, someone who has no answer to his problem. He has no hope of a solution, no remedy for relief. He comes to the one who seems to know everything and have all the answers. Well, gang, this leper is not going to be disappointed. Jesus backs up his big talk with big action. But before we rush on to that, let me ask you a question. Does this transfer over into our lives? I mean, if we are people who have the answers, will people really come to us for help? You bet they will. Jesus told us very plainly that that would happen, that you and I are light. We are to illuminate shadows of confusion that people have. We are to make sense to a civilization that makes no sense at all. We are to be the signage that points out the tripping hazards that people get brought down by. The truth God shows you and the truth that God shows me is to be shared with others. And as you probably already know, they're going to ask, gang, aren't they? They will come running just like this leper when they are convinced that you and I have real answers. I remember this happened so plainly for me when I did a wedding for a friend of mine, a fireman, and in the wedding, I gave the charge to the bride and groom, and I used this as the charge. Ephesians 5:33, it says, So again I say, each man must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. I showed them this diagram, or at least I explained this diagram to them, because this passage is incredible. Just one verse. What this verse is saying to them, I said, there's biblical truth here, bride and groom. Because what the Bible is saying is that husbands, what your job is in this cycle is if the husband loves his wife, meaning if the husband wants the best for his wife at his own expense, puts her needs before his own, does what she needs instead of what he wants and sacrifices for her, well then, if the husband loves the wife, then the wife will in turn respect the husband. And when it says respect here, what it's saying, Jesus is being very, very clear here that men crave their wives' respect. Men want wives who, when they're out with their friends, say things like, my husband's awesome. He's smart. He's a hard worker. He takes care of me. And this is the thing that Jesus says husbands are looking for, and it's different than what wives are looking for. And this is the cycle that I was teaching them to the bride and groom and everyone who was there. I said, husbands, if you love your wives, they will respect you, and it'll just keep going around a perfect circle. But you know what? This also works on the negative as well. There's a need to be careful of this. Husbands, if you don't love your wives, if you don't put their needs in front of you, if you don't want the best for them at your own expense, if you'd rather have the best for you at your wife's expense, if you do that, then wives will not respect their husbands. And all of a sudden, a man feels like, what? My wife thinks I'm Homer Simpson? My wife's telling my friends, oh, him? Oh, brother. That's not what men are looking for. The cycle is this. Husband, love your wife. Wife, respect the husband. And it works the other way. This is the cycle. This is what I'm explaining to them at a wedding. I did a little better job than I did for you because nobody's getting married tonight. But that was the truth. Later, as we're at the reception, you would not believe the amount of people who came up to talk to me about this. I said, I never heard anything like this before. They said, now I know what I'm supposed to focus on for my husband. And my husband's telling me, now I know what to focus on for my wife. And it was just biblical truth. And I realized, when you have the answers, people come to you for help. Same goes for you guys. When we have the answers, they're going to come to us for help. Jesus shows this in Matthew chapter 8 with the leper coming to him. Let's move on. Here, Jesus delivers this incredible information to the masses, right? Jesus has just taught this amazing information to the masses. And he steps down from, I guess, his music stand. And people start coming to him for practical help. Notice this leper in this story. This leper does not come to Jesus and start debating theology with Jesus. He doesn't ask Jesus, hey, Jesus, Son of God, what's heaven like? He doesn't ask him that. He doesn't ask him, why are there children who are starving in the world, Jesus? Or, where did evil come from? Can you explain that one to me, Jesus? No, this man simply says, help me. Help me. Jesus, your words were awesome, but I need a little more. I need physical help. I need to connect with you. I need a touch from you. I need you to back those words up, that big talk, I need you to back that up with some action now. And what really makes this request tough for Jesus, the left field on this one, is that it's not being asked by a beautiful person. This request is not coming from someone powerful, and it's not coming from someone who would be considered consequential in their society. It's being asked for by one of society's outcasts, the people you are to stay away from. This is who's making the request, because he is a leper. Here we have a leper standing in front of Jesus. Jesus' actions will blow their mind. Now, I actually went online and tried to get a picture of what a leper looks like, and I decided I couldn't do that. You don't want to see a picture of what a leper looks like. If you want to, you can go online, Google leper image, and it's horrible. Instead, I'm just going to give you the information that is out there. This is what was standing before Jesus asking for help. It says, in the ancient world, leprosy was the most terrible of all diseases. No other disease reduces a human being for so many years to so hideous a wreck. It said, leprosy might begin with the loss of all sensation in some part of the body. The nerve trunks are affected and the muscles waste away. The tendons contract until the hands are like claws. There follows ulcerations of the hands and feet, and then comes the progressive loss of fingers and toes, until in the end, a whole hand or a whole foot might just drop off. The duration of that kind of leprosy is anything from 20 to 30 years. It is a kind of terrible progressive death in which a man dies by inches. Immediately when leprosy was diagnosed back then, the leper was absolutely and completely banished from human society. He shall remain unclean as long as he has the disease. He is unclean and he shall dwell alone in a habitation outside the camp. And that's from the Bible. The leper had to go around with torn clothes. They couldn't wear regular clothes. They had to be torn, disheveled hair, and with a covering upon their upper lip. And as they went along, they had to always cry out, unclean, unclean. In Palestine, in the time of Jesus, the leper was barred from Jerusalem and from any walled town. The law enumerated 61 different contacts which could defile you, and the defilement involved in the contact with a leper was second only to that of the contact with a dead body. If a leper so much as put his head into a house, the house became unclean, even to the roof beams. One rabbi was said to have been heralded as a great man for actually throwing rocks at a leper to chase them away. There has never been any disease which so separated a man from his fellow men as leprosy did. And this is the man who Jesus touched. Now, I pondered that last statement that was written by Mr. Barclay, Pastor Barclay. He said, no disease. There has never been any disease which so separated a man from his fellow man as leprosy did. The second observation I want to make tonight is this. Jesus touched who no one else would touch. And as I pondered that Barclay's statement, there has never been any disease which so separated a man from his fellow man as leprosy did, I started asking myself the question, what disease, what human condition today would cause me to put arm's length between myself and another person? And you know what? I could think of a couple. I could think of some individuals or even some types of people that would give me pause in making connection with them. Jesus' actions scream at you and me to touch the lepers in our world. And yet, we struggle sometimes with that. Let me first say this. If you're here tonight and you are someone who has been treated like a leper by God's children, I apologize for that. You see, this global church, well, this is my 2,000-year-old family, and we don't always get it right. In fact, we probably get it wrong more often than we get it right. And I know that I have been guilty of that, even myself. I'm sorry for you if you were ever pushed away and looked down on by a follower of Jesus Christ. We are making a big effort here at Westbridge to make sure that that kind of action never happens to anyone again. And I think the people here are making good headway in this. And you can accept my promise, if you have been hurt, that we will keep the flame hot under the pot and keep brewing an attitude of acceptance to everyone. That's for those who may have been hurt. And for those who are followers of Jesus Christ, if you are a follower of Jesus Christ, gang, we need to get this point right by noticing Jesus' third observation. Jesus backed his talk with action. Jesus doesn't do hit and run ministry. He doesn't go off, keep the truth to himself, or even bask in his success of verbally sharing the truth. Instead, he goes the next step of getting his hands dirty. He helps his lepers practically. He heals this leper. Jesus is big talk and big action. And that's what you and I should be. Now, your lepers may be different from Jesus' lepers or even my lepers. These are the ones, whoever you find it easy to keep at arm's length, those are your lepers. But when God sends them across our paths, we are to embrace them. And Jesus shows us, not just with words. I think it would be a shame if we came here every Saturday night and only told people what they should do. That's the hit and run. Big talk, no action. I think it would be a shame if we as individuals went to work and went to school and solely tell people God's truth. Big talk, no action. No, I believe the implication that we get here from Matthew 8, 1 through 4, I believe the implication on our lives from Jesus' actions here is that you and I must avoid the hit and run mentality of ministry, and instead, we must embrace our lepers with action. Big talk and big action. You and I will, and you and I should, share God's truth with the lepers in our lives. But that's only half the job. That's big talk. You and I are to share the truth and then roll up our sleeves and get practical. For some of us, that's going to mean helping a friend through marital trouble. For some of us, the big action is going to be watching their kids so that they can have an evening to go on a date with one another. For some of us, our big action is going to mean being kind and being friendly to the unkind and the unfriendly neighbor. And it could mean helping a teenager who has made a mistake. And lepers are going to come our way when we let the light of God's truth shine from our lives. Make no mistake about that. And sometimes all that is required is to say something verbally. But Jesus shows us that many times we need to roll up our sleeves and help physically. No hit and runs. No big talk, no action. Instead, we are to follow Jesus' example and get our hands dirty. I'm going to ask the band to come back and the worship leaders to come back and give us time to let God talk to us. As we sing through our last worship song, you talk to God, allow God the opportunity to bring to mind maybe something you've been needing to do. Maybe there's somebody who he's placed in your life that, well, there's something you could be doing for them that you haven't been. It could just be a phone call. It could be letting you know you appreciate them. It could be anything that God asks us to do, any action that we've been putting off. Think about those things as we sing together the worship song, The Stand. I pray that we would stand and that we would deliver when you put opportunity in front of us. Thank you for giving us truth and giving us answers and giving us your knowledge. And I pray, Lord, that we would share that with others, that we would also be people who are people of big action. Lord, help us to embrace those who come to us who others would cast away, and help us to do what they need. Lord, show us how to fulfill being big talk and big action. And I pray that opportunities that come this week would remind us that we are called to be salt and to be light to this earth. And I pray that you'd help each of us to do that. Thank you for how you've allowed us to do that so far, and I pray that you help us take that even further. Now, Lord, keep your hand upon us as we travel through the weekdays. Keep us strong through the power of your Holy Spirit. Help us to come back here next week, ready to learn more of you, ready to serve and thank the God who has given us so much. In Jesus' name, amen.